Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Randy Feltner, 26 years of combination experience, Battalion Chief 20 with Naval District Washington Fire Emergency Services. Did Randy always know the fire service was what he wanted to be in? No. In a funny way, it was like he was pressured into doing it by his friends who were volunteers. Randy kept putting it off, but one day gave in and went to ride along with them. From that day going forward, everything changed for Randy. Unbeknownst to him, he was surrounding himself with individuals who represented what the fire service embodies. Selfless servants who understood the mission. But with anything in life, Randy went through the challenges of finding himself to become a better person and firefighter. Randy shares a heartfelt story I hope can resonate with the listeners when it comes to the job. I sincerely thank him for coming on and sharing his story for others to listen to. With that, I present Randy Feltner.
My name's Randy Feltner. I am a 25, almost 26 year vet of the fire service, I guess. I don't like using the word veteran too much. I sound like I'm a soldier, but experience wise, I guess. I started in my hometown. I was just kind of floating around after high school. Didn't really have a whole lot to do. And I was hanging out with some buddies who were on the fire department, and they kept trying to talk me into doing it. And I was like, these guys are just a bunch of rednecks who ride on the back of fire trucks and, drink beer all day. Well, now some of that was true. They finally talked me into it on a dare. And I came down there, and after the first call that I got to run, I was like, oh, okay, I get it now. I was played sports in high school. I wasn't very good at any of the sports, but I liked being on a team. Then that kind of, high school's over, that ends, and you go out into the workforce. And I was working at a desk selling insurance at Geico for a while, and repoed cars for a while. And when I went down to the fire department, I kind of just found something that was, I'm in a group again. Mm-hmm. Fell in love with it, started learning how to do it. And then, a couple years go by, and they had some openings at the Navy base for the fire department, about 10 minutes from my house. Few of the guys that are on my volunteer department were nice enough to kind of, hey, you should write this on your resume, do this, and got me in the door. And ever since, 23 years of working for the Navy since then, I've gotten to, luckily I did 16 years at Dalgren at the Navy base near my house. Was promoted to captain there, and then about 8 years after that, I finally got promoted to battalion chief and went up to Indian Head, Maryland, which is our sister station for Dahlgren, and have been there for the past six. I was lucky enough to, get to work with some of these guys. Now I'm being the old guy at the firehouse. Those guys are the really old guys at the firehouse. Getting to work with them, both career and volunteer, was pretty cool. Experience to kind of come up and be raised by these guys, and now then I get to teach some of their kids stuff, and now I'm watching their kids teach the new kids stuff. I'm only 45 years old. I feel like I'm 80 as far as fire department service goes, getting to watch that stuff. But it's been a wild ride.
Okay, all right. Now I know you said you started as a volunteer. When you finally decided to go career, was that the only and first organization you applied to, or did you apply to a plethora of them?
Oh yeah, no, I applied. I live kind of in between DC and Richmond and Virginia. So I had Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania and Charlottesville and Albemarle County. And I applied all over the place. I tested in Fredericksburg, I tested in Spotsylvania. And luckily adding to each shift. They were adding an extra firefighter to each shift. So they had hired two guys, and then they ended up hiring two more. And I was the fourth candidate, lucky to sneak in the back door. So they were the first ones to call. And I still remember I was sitting at Geico, and I was doing 12-hour shifts on the phone selling insurance, which was, it was a fun job for being 20 years old. But when I got the phone call, I literally hung the phone up. And I just told my boss that I'm quitting in 2 weeks. Then I realized that I'm going to work for the federal government. It will take a little longer than 2 weeks. So it was a little breeze here. But yeah, they were the first ones I called. So I got lucky enough to be, close to home. And even we were doing those 24 hours on, 24 hour off shifts. I didn't have a long commute. Was getting ready to get married. So it all kind of came together at the same time.
Okay. Now, only if you can like talk on this, what is the process like? Is the process for applying to like a federal fire department different than a municipality?
Not really. There's like a so there's a website called USA Jobs, and they do all like the hiring for like the government. So if you could work for like, Bureau of Land Management or the Agriculture Department or the Department of Defense, you apply on this website, then it filters down to like the HR departments locally. So right now, like we're in a hiring process right now, where we have people that are applying just for our departments specifically, but still have to apply through that big website, and just then it gets filtered down to our liaison for HR and stuff. So
Okay.
yes, it's on a much bigger scale, but the same kind of process.
Okay. All right. But I would imagine they probably deep dive a little bit more since it's federal level.
Yes, yeah, so like with us, you have to have like a security clearance.
Okay.
So where they would do like at a municipal department where I've done like background checks, and you have to do like the psyche eval, stuff like that. We have two guys getting ready to start at our firehouse in the next month or so, and they had to go through like fingerprinting and background checks, and they do all like the national security stuff just to make sure that they didn't have anything that might, trigger anything. And then once they get cleared to that, then they finish the process with like physicals and stuff.
Okay. All
It's
right.
a longer process just because they have to do all that vetting.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Now, for those that don't know, including myself, can you tell us a little bit about the department? How many stations, amount of personnel, things of that nature? It doesn't have to be exact.
Yeah, so we have about 300 firefighters in our department. We service all the Navy bases in and around the Washington, D.C. area. So, like where I live at is a little bit south. The base I worked at Dahlgren is the furthest base south. It's actually in Virginia. All the rest of the bases are in Maryland, with the exception of like Camp David, where we have a firehouse at Thurmont, which is where the president's retreat is. We do like the hospital in Bethesda, so like where the president would fly into the hospital to something happens to them. Our firefighters take care of that. We have Pax River Naval Air Station, which is one of the biggest air stations on the East Coast. We have different like weapons manufacturing facilities. We have the Naval Academy, so it's a real hodgepodge of different disciplines for all the departments. But we have about 14 stations, 300 firefighters. And then we have a pretty decent sized admin that are kind of spread out. So there's all those guys, even the fire chief pulls a 24-hour shift
Oh.
with us. So yeah, once a week he's in the firehouse. And he's been traveling around a little bit, visiting different firehouses for the tours, but he's in the firehouse for a shift. And because the battalion chiefs, like my shift, I never work on Mondays. My partner shift, he doesn't work on Wednesdays. So like my district chief, he covers, when we're off.
Okay.
And we have a different, like the prevention battalion chiefs who work like a 56-hour work week. They work one 24-hour night. They work one day during the week too to cover, operational roles that as needed, and keeps their skills going too.
Okay. So like it wouldn't be anything if like the fire chief actually puts his stuff on the rig and works on the rig.
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Huh.
Yeah. And
Okay.
they'll come in and, or like say the fire chief were to come down for the night to my station and I was working, he may take the buggy and run the battalion for the night, and I'll get on the ladder truck and ride the front seat.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Now, as far as your apparatus complement, I'm assuming you have engines, ladders. Do you guys do ambulance services or no?
Yeah, we do. We have an ambulance, and every battalion has one. So like I have two stations in my battalion. We have a house that has an engine and a ladder truck, and then the ambulance in the building with the battalion. And then there's a annex with a firehouse on it that just has a single engine company. So our ambulance runs, and we run mutual aid with the ambulance too. So they're out in the county a bunch.
Okay. And so I just kind of want to get more and let the listeners hear more about the department and how they operate. When it comes to work, like, is it engine truck specific work, or do you guys do both?
So our ladder truck is a Quint, but at our base we don't run it like a Quint. It's run as a ladder truck. So
Okay.
the truck guys do all the truck work, and then the pump is there if for something is needed. But the engine guys do the engine work. Our second engine would come in, take the second position. The ambulance guys, they're supposed to cross staff the apparatus. So if it's like a working fire on base, they would drop their ambulance and put their gear on and go to work with the truck and the engine. But if they run it out, we run it out in the county, we run it just a straight truck or a straight engine. There's no,
Okay. So, you guys are allowed to leave base, because I only ask because I did an interview a while back with a chief that was with the government, and he was talking about how, as far as properties on the base, the fire codes are so strict. They don't normally respond to anything on the base that's really fire related. Is that the same with you?
Yes and no. It really depends on what's going on. So like we do go off base. We have a really strong mutual aid agreement with Charles County, Maryland, which is 100% volunteer. But if we run out there, it looks like you're running with the city. Like we're like it's bang 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 getting on the scene. It's like the engine's coming from every which way.
Okay.
But they and they do the same thing. They come on base. They just get escorted by the police onto the base.
Gotcha.
But we the base commander does have the option to, like, if something's going on, he can cut it. Like, the national security, we're not running mutual aid right now.
Ah, okay.
If we're involved in something that's going on base, like if there's an operation going on that we need to be around for, we call and put ourselves out of service with mutual aid.
Okay.
The base is always the first priority.
Understood.
Going out in town and playing is fun. And it does keep our skills up because, like, a lot of stuff that happens on base, if there's a fire on base and there's something crazy involved, there's not a whole lot we can do with it. We have to kind of just based on what the operation is. So if we go out there, we run it like it's a bread and butter house fire. Now we do have housing on base and office buildings and stuff like that, where
Right.
we would run just like a normal every normal department.
Okay. All right. And as far as a structure fire response, let's just say mutual aid, do you just send the closest base, or do you send a complement on the first alarm assignment?
Oh, so our bases are really spread out. Like if I left my base to go to training up in Annapolis at the at where like we call headquarters, because the fire chief and the deputy fire chief's offices are there. That's an hour ride for me in a car.
Oh, okay.
So like our sister base down in Dahlgren, we go fill in down there when they're if they ex it, go off base and use all their services to for like a mutual aid fire to help the county out there. We'll send an engine down there, but it's still like a 25, 30-minute ride.
Understood. Okay, so you are far spread out.
We have bases in Northern Maryland all the way down to the on the Chesapeake Bay over to in the city of DC. So we're all over the place.
Okay. All right. And as far as your number of personnel on each truck, what's your minimum staffing requirements?
So we have to have four on suppression apparatus. And then we run two on the ambulance. And then we have the brush trucks, or if we run a special service, like if we run a hazmat, the truck company will take the two out of the back of the hazmat or back out of the truck and they'll drive the hazmat
Okay.
with the ladder truck.
Gotcha. Okay. And BLS or ALS providers?
Both. So we have ALS. We had my station, every station that has ALS has six paramedics assigned to it. Right now we have five, or we're getting ready to hire another one. So if it's not mandated, it's ALS all the time. So like if their ALS people are off, like on vacation or have traded time, then we put a BLS provider back there and just make the ambulance BLS for the day.
All right. And let me see here. I just want to like get all my questions out that I like to ask. Oh, what is your rank structure there?
So we run it with we got obviously the fire chief, who is the the head of the department. He works directly with the it's called CNIC, but it's the head. The head they run all the emergency services. So he works directly with them. Our deputy chief is in charge of all the hiring, basically, and then he does works with the. We have assistant chiefs that cover like training, logistics, EMS train EMS. What else we got? Training, logistics, EMS. Oh, somebody's gonna get really mad at me. I'm forgetting to do what they do. Oh, prevention. And then they have battalion chiefs underneath of them, with the exception of logistics. Logistics, he kind of just runs by himself, but he's in charge. I would, there's no way, it could not pay me enough money to do this guy's job. My current boss did that job for a while, and now our current logistics chief, he handles all of the purchasing for the department. He's people that help him with it, but he's in charge of all purchasing, testing of equipment, apparatus. He has to do all of it. There's no way that I would be able to handle that without, murdering someone, probably. And then just operationally, it's our district chiefs. So like myself, our base at Indian Head, and then Dahlgren are in one district. So the district chief, he's my boss, and he's the boss for me and my partner. And then the battalion chiefs down at Dahlgren. Underneath of them is the captains. They run the stations, and then they have, the firefighters fall underneath of them.
Okay. All right. Do you have lieutenants or engineers or just firefighters?
Just firefighters. The Navy did do that for a while. We did that in the region for a while. When I got hired, there was, firefighters, then drivers, and then they went to, like, it's more certification based. So whatever certification you have, you get pumped up to a certain pay level. And then, now it's, if you get turned over to drive, you're turned over to drive, and then the captain's gonna sign, if you were my driver, you'd be my driver. Unless, like, it was your day to ride the ambulance or get detailed somewhere.
All right. And as a battalion chief, do you have an aide or is it just you in the car?
It's just me most of the time. If we have someone who's like on light duty that can't do like IDLH, they'll ride in the car and take notes. If an extra chief is working, like one of those assistant chiefs or the prevention chiefs is working, and they're not needed on the fire truck, they'll come ride the buggy with me. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now going back to you get the phone call, they want to hire you. Upon walking through those station doors, what was it like for you? Was it everything you thought it would be?
No, it was super intimidating. I thought I was going to go in and be like the firehouse that I volunteer at, because I knew some of those guys. And those guys at the volunteer house were not the same guys at the paid department. Much more professional and locked in. I remember we walked in. You walk in the front door, and there's like a clipboard that has your name on it, and it had like, what watch you had in the watch office, which meant you had to take care of the log book. And then there was a cleaning assignment underneath that, whatever time that was. And if you did not take a highlighter and highlight your name, it did not matter if you were sitting in the battalion chief's office, you were not at work. And I just remember, like, it was the volunteer firehouse. I could just come in, come and kind of come and go as I please, and come in the door and smoke and joke with everybody. And I walked in there, and they were like, this first thing, make sure you fill it, make me do this and do that. And it was very intimidating, to see some of these guys that I just have known my whole life in a different, in a different light, in a more professional manner, I guess. Not that they weren't professional at the volunteer fire department, but it's less, less
Formal.
intense. Yeah, less formal. Yeah.
All right. Now with that, let's just after a few years under your belt, did you seek an individual to be like your quote unquote mentor? Like I truly believe that people that come into the fire service, they should find someone they want to emulate. So were you able to find that there to make you who you are today?
Yeah, so I had a few, and I was, like I said, I was super lucky. I went to a shift that had a bunch of great men on it. Yeah, I'll talk about a few of them. There was one of the senior guys. His name was Dave Graham. He was a captain at a different base. That base closed, so he just came down to Dalburn as a fireman to finish out his career. But he was also a volunteer life member at our fire department. He wasn't active when I started being a volunteer, but he was always around. He's one of them guys that would kind of come in and stir everybody up and then just kind of roll out. And then before you realize why you were fighting, he's in his car going home laughing. But he was one also, the one that would took me over to the trucks. You check this, and this is why you check this. You do this because you this we would go to the building. This building has this kind of alarm panel in it. He was very didn't want to act like he was like the senior guy, but was the senior guy. And then my volunteer fire chief, when I got hired, actually two of them, when I got to the volunteer fire department, he ended up becoming a captain at our station and a battalion chief at our station. But he worked the opposite shift, but he was still, whenever he was over on our shift, he was just as intense there as he was at the volunteer fire department. And Tracy, his name is Tracy Hall. He was he retired as a battalion chief with us. Same thing. Just I didn't really have a choice of if I was going to find a mentor. Like they came and found me. And
Gotcha.
I don't think they did it just, they did it because, they knew me from volunteering with me, but they didn't want me to get into bad habits. All those guys had a really a good work ethic. And our fire chief, he's still our fire chief here in Colonial Beach, Dave Roby. And me and him, we butted heads a long time at the volunteer fire department, but at work it was always good. And he was until the day he retired. I didn't work with him for the last couple of years he retired, but even then he was still checking on me when I'd see him. How you doing this? And he was another one that lives, eat, and breathes the fire department. And if you didn't do it his way, you were wrong. But his way, as I got older and matured, was the right way a lot of the times, even if I didn't want to admit, I'll never, he'll hear this and be like, God, son of a bitch, I'm doing it. But it was and growing and maturing, you kind of realize that. At the
Right.
time, you don't like it because it's like these guys are so uptight and they want to ask, I want to have a good time. And but you have a good time after you do the things that they ask you to
Yeah.
do.
Yeah. Okay. And how long did you wait to how long did you wait before you decided to start moving up the ranks, and why?
I was there about 8 years, before I put in the promoted at work. And luckily I got it the first time I put in. But we were lucky enough, our neighboring county, King George, they were building a new firehouse. So they were had their entire operation was moved into like a an old like bus garage. So they got all these grants for training. So they put on all the instructor classes and the officer classes like in a year and a half. But they didn't have nowhere to have them, so they had them at our base. And as kind of a trade-off, we all got to take the class. So I got all my certifications, just knocked them out quick. And I was doing my associate's degree at the time too. So I had all the stuff in, and I was like, I've been here 8 years. Like this promotion process is coming in. Let me try and see if I can put in. And luckily enough, I got through the job, and I probably got promoted a little too early. If you ask some of the guys, I changed shifts. So that was a big adjustment. So I still had a lot to learn, but I thought like, I'm going to be here for 25 years at least. I'm 8 years in. Let's see if we can take the next step. And I got through it. Plus, we were talking about starting a family, talking about having kids and doing all that stuff, and figured, the extra pay would be nice too.
Okay. So you did you go from firefighter to captain?
Firefighter to captain, yeah. So our captains is it's like basically like almost like a lieutenant structure,
Okay.
but they're called lead firefighters, and some places have them as lieutenant, some places have them as captain. So in our structure, it's captain.
Okay. All right. Now with that,
Oh,
and
and plus, I didn't want to ride the ambulance anymore, and the captains don't ride the ambulance. So I was thinking that's added bonus.
and that's another thing I've noticed. I mean, I'm not, I
It
can't say
happens.
I blame you. Yeah,
No.
because like you did your time. And you're like, hey, In order, if I want to get off this ambulance, then I have to promote. So I get that. I get it.
Wrong. I don't think that's exactly the right reason, but it was added, you know, in hindsight, because now I'd be fussing the guys who don't ride the ambulance, and I'm like, I was the same way,
Right.
but you know, it was an added bonus to doing it.
Okay. All right. But like you said, you did do your time, 8 years.
Oh yeah.
So no. Okay. All right. Now, once you got to captain, was it everything you thought it would be?
So yes, but no. And what I mean by that is like I worked for two really good captains, Bill Sanford and Gene Jordan. Could not be more opposite people, but they worked really well together. But I knew it was going to be a lot of work. And I had taken all these classes, but I didn't expect a lot of the hiccups along the way. Like I wasn't trained to deal with the people, like you had to deal with people. So I did get lucky when I went from B shift to A shift as a captain. One of the guys who was really, he was kind of like the temperature in the room. Like if Steve was okay, the ship was okay, you know what I mean? I was smart enough to know that nothing happens without this guy's approval. I can talk in shift meeting all day, but if Steve doesn't give the not no the nod to the guys, it's not gonna happen. So I kind of pulled him aside and was like, buddy, you know, you've taught me this job 8 years ago. Like you taught me how to be a fireman. I'm gonna do some things. If you think I'm Because he was a captain too at a different base before. So if you think I'm going down a different road, you know, come tell me. Don't talk to them. And he did a few times. He pulled me aside. I'm like, you know, that I would do this different. He was really cool about it. And I didn't really have a lot of problems because he was accepting enough of a young, I mean, this guy was 50 years old. I'm 29 trying to tell him what to do. But he was cool with it. So everybody else was kind of cool with it, and we kind of all grew together.
What would be your advice to any individual out there listening that is either striving to be a company officer or already a new company officer? Like, what are some advices that you can give?
So it's going to sound counterintuitive, but don't focus as much on, knowing every tactic and strategy out there. Like we all know that stuff. Like we know that as firemen. We know that as the guys who fill in, you know, when we're driving, when we have to go over to the and ride the seat. Like we've trained on that for 10, 15, whatever, however many years you've been in the department. You know that stuff. Now you get to keep working at it and be better at it every day. Like I still work on it all the time. But we don't and this is something that I talk about all the time when I go out to different fire departments and run my mouth is we don't train our people on like dealing with conflict and dealing with people and checking our ego at the door. Because when we get promoted, you know, we put that big S on our chest and we think we are just, you know, we think we're the man. And maybe we are, but there's always another man out there too. Or girl, or someone way smarter than us, that may have a better answer. And if we got to let our ego out of the way, so if you can check your ego, you'd be way more effective, I think,
No,
as a leader.
that's a fact. I think that's one of the things that plagues the fire service is the ego portion or individuals, and we all know who they are, but individuals who promote for the wrong reasons, it's not about the mission, it's more about the individual instead of, the team, the atmosphere,
Oh,
that
yeah.
cohesiveness. So no, that's 100% facts what you said.
And even if our intentions are good and are for the team, we can lose that too. Like I remember when I was before I got promoted to battalion chief, you know, I went through the process for like 13 different spots in our department. Like we're a 300 person department. That's a lot of different battalion chiefs, you know? Like, and they told me no every time. And they told me no, not because I wasn't qualified, I wasn't ready. I thought I was ready. but they knew I wasn't, or I would, bomb a test or whatever. But luckily, I went, I had the opportunity in 2018 to go to the Fire Officers Academy in Virginia. The State Fire Chiefs Association puts it on. It's an amazing program. But I thought I was going as a captain to the Company Officer Academy to learn, like, the latest and greatest tactics and do command simulations and all this stuff. And the first day I'm there, Chief Randy Kern from down in Florida comes in and hands us his book on conflict resolution. And we're talking about, how to deal with, so and so, their feelings because they were attacked for being late to work. I was like, where am I at? An hour later, we're out in the engine bay doing a team building exercise where we're holding a tennis ball on these strings, kumbaya and out in the bay. And I was driving home from Farmville, Virginia, which is like 2 hours from my house. And I'm like, what did I sign up for? And then as we went to the next weekend and the next weekend and the next weekend, I was like, oh, I get it now. This is about more than just what we do when the tones go off. And then the next year I got into the Chief Officers Academy because it's for like new and or like upcoming chiefs. And because I'd been through the program, they accepted me in. I get in, and this gentleman, he's the deputy chief down in North Myrtle Beach now, Chief John Galganski, and he had a homework assignment for us. We send an email to everybody that we work with and ask the good and bad about our leadership styles. And they all said some night, but firemen, they're gonna tell you the truth. So even some of my best friends, were like, hey, you work hard and you care and you're fair most of the time. Every single one of them on the bad side were like, bro, you only care about your next promotion. I think I was, because I got told no so many times, I was angry. So it come off like, I wanted to be a battalion chief because I thought I would do a good job. I hopefully, if my guys listen to this, I do a good job. I'm sure they got some, problems day to day with me, but and I wanted to make the department better. I thought I could do better than the other candidates. But when I, you get told no, and then you kind of stew about it for a while, and that kind of breeds around the station, and you don't realize how your attitude brushes off on everybody else. I didn't, and to be there, they're probably right, because I didn't even read that part of the email until months later when I'm sitting at home. I was home for 4 months after I had my heart attack, and I'm reading these emails, just bored one day at the house, and I'm like, shit, they were right. And then it was like, I got it now. That was like the missing piece, to be brutally told that you're terrible by guys that you love to death, that you would do anything for. It was a great exercise. It was a humbling exercise and a kick in the gut, but it was a great exercise.
And to me, that is the definition of true friendship. Because, we have, like I said, nobody likes to be the bad guy, but at some point, I've had bosses tell me, and even and I adapted this myself to this day, don't make me have to do my job. And I get why they say that. We're friends here, but don't make me have to do my job when it comes to what you should and shouldn't do. And so it is an ego check when you see that, because you'll have some who will read that and it'll just piss them off more. They'll shut down more. But the fact that you were able to read that and go, I got it, like that just shows the growth and maturity right there.
And I think, yeah, and we all have, like, we work with 10, 12 people. There's ones we like more than other ones. So I could read the email from, like, oh, well, I don't like that guy anyway. I don't, he's an idiot, But then you read it from like one of the guys who's, in your group of best friends on the planet, and he says the exact same thing. He's not gonna lie to you about that. He's not gonna just make up because you didn't take a trash out last week. So I said, the brutal honesty, it would suck. It sucks, and I don't like it. I had the email still. I read them every once in a while. I'm like, God, I was such an idiot. I wasted so much time being dumb that I could have been more productive and been better at what I need to do.
If you don't mind me asking, how many times did you take it?
The promotion process? I'm not sure. It was probably like 8 went through like eight or nine. It was for 13 different spots.
Okay, I
And the
got
only
you.
reason I remember that because me and my boss, well, one of my old boss, he had promoted to prevention chief. He was on the panel that when I got selected. So after the process was over, he had took a picture of me during the panel when we were doing like the inbox part. I'm sitting there and I'm, looking over the emails. And he took a picture of me. He sent it to me about a month later after the results that came out. He was like, lucky number 13. Because he had worked and listened to me complain and be in his office and talking about it and trying to get better. And so he had been keeping track too.
Okay. And so my next question is, now that you're in the role that you are in, two-part question. What does leadership look like to you, and what kind of leader did you want to be?
Ooh. So to me now, 45-year-old Randy. So leadership to me means that none of it is about me. It's all about them. Sometimes it may seem like it's about me because you have to make decisions and you have to. And they may not understand what you're doing. Making sure it's about the people you're. So I serve them, they don't serve me. And that's a catch line. It's real cliche, and people say that a lot. But I do believe that. Like, I don't, and just like my boss, his job is to work for us. And I work for the people underneath of me. And then, it goes on down. I don't think I thought that when I first started. Yeah, these are, if it would have, if it was 25-year-old me, I'd have been like, oh, these are my people. They do what I need done because I know what's going on. It's the exact opposite. Like, I think I work for them, and it's hard to keep that singular mindset all the time because it's stuff you have to get done. But to me, that's what leadership looks like. It's serving other people, not leading them or telling them what to do. It's empowering them to make their own decisions. And then the hard part is to check that when something's going wrong. And but I also invite them to check me. We had a situation last week where one of my captains had checked me on something that, and he was right. And I acted a little quicker than I probably should have on something, and didn't really consult them. At the end of the day, I don't have to, but I probably should have. And he knew that he can send me an email because I was off. I've been off for a few days. He could send me an email. I would listen to it, and we could have a call. We'll talk tomorrow about it. But we also have. They know that we'll sit and listen to them, and I'm not going to come down with like, hellfire and brimstone because they question something that I'm doing.
Okay. In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
So I think it gets thrown around a lot, and it gets used by for good and bad, right? So some people want to use the word aggressive because they want to prove how awesome they are, how what a great fireman they are, and how salty they are or whatever. But I think it is also necessary to be a good fireman using that term. Like, you can't be good at this job and not be aggressive. Because we're dealing with volatile situations, whether it's, fire blowing out all the windows, or we're dealing with some kind of crazy hazmat, or there's a car down a ravine hanging on by you. You have to be aggressive in those situations to mitigate the hazards we have to face. But we can't use that as an excuse to take unnecessary risks either, right? If there's a house and there's fire blowing out of every window and coming out the basement steps, and there's no like searchable space in that house, what are you doing? Right? Gotta be smart. Now, we don't need to be use that also. And I think there's people who use that as a crutch too, though, to not go do something too. So I think it's a fine line in between. But to me, I think it's aggressive should be like when they put the pride patches out and they have like, all the different catch little keywords on there. Like, I think aggressive should be on all of our patches at some in some form, whether it's a picture or something, because it's the key part of our job. It's why we all like this job too. I like this job because we get to go do something different every day, and they get that adrenaline pumping. Well, to do that, we have to do some aggressive stuff.
Okay.
But aggressive looks different for everybody. I think it looks different for everybody. But they say you being able to take a calculated risk and then act on it, I guess is the
Yeah.
right word.
Yeah. No, I'm tracking you. Okay. All right. Outside training. I'm assuming because like the fact that you work for the Naval District, do other parts of the area you live in, do they look at federal military fire departments different from like municipality fire departments?
we have this argument all the time. In our area, maybe not as bad as other areas. And the reason I say that is because, like, so we live around DC. But we, a lot of our guys volunteer in St. Mary's County or Charles County or Prince George's County, Anne Arundel. So they, all these departments, like Prince George's County is one of the, biggest fire departments in the world, but they still have some volunteers in the county, right? So we have guys that, know all these people, and people who, like, we have guys who volunteer with that we work with mutual aid wise, but they work in DC. So they're all kind of integrated. But I also do think, like, there is the bias towards you hear the jokes, and there's like all kinds of like satire pages like on Instagram about federal firefighters, and they have recliners strapped to their backs, and we're kind of, we're not running 30 house fires a day like you're in the middle of DC.
Okay. So, but the similarities are there. You still run the same type of calls. You still do EMS transports, and you still run your run of the mill, what we would call sometimes like BS calls. Like that still
Absolutely.
occurs.
Oh yeah. We run those, and we'll run those like we have on our bases, we have everything from like storage facilities to military training stuff, off giant office buildings, houses. We run a boat off of our base for the environmental side of it because they have like they do some manufacturing on our base. So if anything gets in the river, we're on the Potomac River. But our environmental doesn't have the crews to man the boats, so they let us man the boats to help with the environmental spills and stuff like that. But we also get to use the boats to go do rescues with too out in the river. So we integrate with Maryland and Virginia together, all through the river. We're dealing with, career paid. We mix it all together. So a lot of those guys, we end up getting to know them and maybe change their mindset towards the federal service by doing that too.
All right. And if I'm a mutual aid company coming into your area, I'm assuming though you guys have like more, I don't want to say pull, but like you have more say so as to what goes on in your first due area, right?
So we meet, and the same thing out, same thing with when we go off base, right? So when we go off base, we go into Charles County, Maryland. We run with their SOGs, how they do things, where we and we train on that. We're getting better about bringing their chiefs in to at least have a sit down conversation. Hey, when you guys come on, we're going to be doing this, because when they come in, they get stopped at the gate. The police escort them to the scene, just because they don't know where they're going on the base, and there's not like a lot of information out in the world about that. They run that they'll run, and our SOGs are similar to theirs as far as like assignments and stuff. So we're good about working. They come in, they play by our rules. We go out there, we play by their rules.
And just because I'm sure the listeners might want to know your schedule, what do you guys work?
So we do a 48-72, but it's not, it is and it's not. So like my pay period starts yesterday, and I'm off Sunday, Monday, then I work tomorrow and Wednesday. So I'll go work Tuesday, Wednesday. And then my one of those three shifts that I work in the pay period, we work 144 hours every pay period, 70 or 72 a week, 144 pay period. I'll be off Thursday or Friday, then I'll work Saturday, Sunday, and then I'll get off Monday morning. I'll be off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and then I'll work Thursday, Friday, and then I'll be off Saturday, Sunday, Monday again. So it's two on, three off, two on, three off, two on, two off. But the way it works is it's like my work group is work group four, which is Monday work group. So I never work on Monday. And the battalion chiefs, It's good and bad. I rarely have to work overtime. Only time I have to work overtime is if my partner doesn't come in, like he's on sick leave or something like that. Then I can cover for him. I can't just cover for the fireman on overtime, unless it goes through the whole list. So like when the guys get off on Monday, the work group four guys that get off on Monday, they may be held on overtime, but they still get 2 days at home if they work overtime.
All right. Has there ever been discussion about adding an extra day off? Because most of the time, if you work a 48, most organizations do 48 96s.
There hasn't, and because the federal guys are a little different. We do like we don't get over to, we don't hit overtime until we work over 72 hours in a week. So our hourly rate sometimes looks lower than like municipal guys, but because of the amount of hours we work, the pay kind of balances out.
As far as when it comes to like training and outside training, I'm assuming your organization, like if you wanted to go to Florida for a search class, like are they all on board, or do you have to kind of go through, is it a little bit more strenuous?
So it depends on what it is, and it also de kind of depends on what's going on. So like, and I agree with this 1,000%. And some people get mad at me when I say that, but like, if you worked in our station and you came to me and was like, "I want to go take a search class down in Florida," but then I look and you don't have all of like. All of your ones, like your instructor one, officer one, inspector one, that you need to be an actor. We're not going to approve that. We're really lucky. We have MFRE, which is Maryland's. They run through the University of Maryland. They do all the certification classes for Maryland and all like the Mayday classes and hazmats and all that stuff like that. We have a training center like 20 miles from our firehouse. And some of our guys actually work there, so we can get guys in all these MFRE classes all over the state, and a lot of times they'll just send guys, and we're good about like, hey, you're working Tuesday, but you have class on Wednesday, Tuesday and Wednesday, take class Tuesday, and then we'll just we have the ability to allow for that stuff. The far off training, a lot of guys just. And I've done it. I do it all the time. Like when I go to a conference to teach, I'll take a shift of vacation time if it's really like kind of out there. Like for local ones, I'll ask if I can just go and get the training, and they'll kind of just put me off to go, and I'll go to class for 2 days, which is the best part about going out and teaching at these conferences. You get to go to the conference for free. So I've gotten more training in the past 3 or 4 years than I've gotten probably the previous 20. Not on my dime, because I mean I'm not going out and. I go to these conferences and trying to make $1 million teaching classes. I'm just going to tell them my little bit of my story and then learn something while I'm there. So it's pretty good. That it really depends on the situation. So there's no's and there's yeses. It kind of just varies on what's going on too, and especially what's going on around the region. Like if somebody wants to take off in the middle of at the end of May. To go to a class, probably not going to happen because the Naval Academy has graduation and we're committed that entire week. The entire department is, or like if there's the air show at Pax River, the department's going to be there for that. Or if like the inauguration's going on, we have to support DC with that kind of stuff. So it really depends. The mission comes first when any of that stuff.
So definitely some mandos can occur depending on what's going on.
But that's also too, we had the luxury of having those extra personnel with like the prevention staff and the training staff and the chief officers that they kind of move their time around too to help backfill a lot of that stuff.
No, awesome. Physical fitness, the importance of it. You mentioned earlier, and I definitely would, if only if you would love to share, you mentioned something about a heart attack that you had.
I've always been a big promote. Well, so when I started, I'm not tall. I'm, 5'9", 5'9½" on a good day, depending on what shoes I'm wearing. When I started, I got the call, "Hey, you're gonna get hired." I go do my physical. No problem. I take off to go on vacation with my wife before I start. And I checked my voicemail from the cruise ship, which cost $1 million, but I wanted to just make sure it was, and they was like, "Hey, you need to call. There's an issue with your physical." What is going on here? So I call and they're like, "You looks like you have an enlarged heart. You need to go get," because they just did a front X-ray at the for my physical. So I got my primary care doctor. He's like, "No, buddy, you're just fat." I was like 260, 270 at 5'9". But not like morbidly obese, just kind of, I didn't really even realize I was that big. I guess I was obese, but I didn't feel like that. I feel like someone who's that way. So my first day, we go to walk up the steps at the building next door. I'm in gear, air pack. We walk up the second flight of steps and I'm out of breath. I'm like, something's got to change here. And my wife was already had, she has started her fitness journey and I was starting to lose weight for we were because we were going to get married, so she wanted to look her best on the what like women do, and so I started losing weight and realized I felt so much better. So it's always been I started running and lifting weights and doing all those things, and it was always a big part of it. I had just got my physical done in August of 2018, and all my numbers looked good. I was a little overweight, but not like crazy. I was still running and doing all these things. And the guy was like, "Your numbers, you're one of the healthiest guys on your shift." And then like a month and a half later, we're at the gym and our trainers got us doing like boot camp style workouts every day. She was the trainer for the Navy guys, but she didn't have any time, nothing to do on certain days of the week when we would come to the gym at like 1 o'clock. She's like, I'll get you guys to a class whenever you come over. I'm like, okay, great. And me and another guy, Brent O'Neill, were in class, and we were just about 10 minutes into it. And I remember leaning down to do a stretch, and then I remember waking up, and all the guys were over top of me. And I didn't have a shirt on, but I just thought maybe I passed out because we had ate Arby's before we went to the gym. So smart. I've never had I had not had Arby's to this day since then because I'm convinced it was that's what happened.
Right.
But I had a massive heart attack and I went into cardiac arrest in the gym. And luckily, I was with them and not home cutting grass because Brent came over, immediately flipped me over and told the girl to get the AED. And Brent started doing compressions. And here comes Kelsey back with the AED. And my guys were in the other part of the gym lifting weights. And they came in and, again, had to be horrific for them. Two of my best friends on the planet were one of them drove me to the hospital. The other one was the medic that day. So, he's in the back of the ambulance and we're riding to the hospital. And they did not tell me that I had gone to cardiac arrest because the AED pads were off me when I woke up. I had the IO needle in my shin, like they were gonna give me drugs and stuff, but I woke up and was talking to my wife on the phone. So he gets on the phone and he's talking to the charge nurse and the doctor and like, "Don't give him anything, just give him Tylenol, just give him the aspirin. We'll get to the hospital, we'll figure out what's going on." And I hear him say, to the doctor, he was in cardiac arrest for 4 minutes. I'm like, "Excuse
Damn.
me, what?" And then my wife calls, and his name's Russell Weaver, but we called him Cookie since we've known him. And he picks up the phone when my wife calls me. It's like, "Hey, Katie, it's Russell." And I knew when he used his real name, like something
That's
was not.
serious,
Yeah. So we get to the hospital, and I played in my head like, "Oh man, like I've been through this, countless times. The guy didn't make it. Like I'm here." So instantly had that euphoria of like, I should be dead, but I'm not. And we, I'm running off that adrenaline and off that high. And I'm joking and smoking in the in with the guys in the trauma room. A couple of them used to work for the fire department that we ran mutual aid with. So I had a cornucopia of people there. And we go back to the cath lab and the doctor, Dr. Prasad, he after they get me all prepped for surgery, he goes in and he's like, "Oh, yeah, there it is. You're 100% blocked in your right coronary artery."
Damn.
So I said, "Just lay back, we'll take care of it." And he, was going through and he thinks he's funny because he's in the middle of surgery. He's like, "Oh, I think I made it worse." And I was like, "Oh, you make it worse, it's 100%, But I was so high on like they dope you full of fentanyl so you don't touch where they're jamming that stuff in your leg. I passed that out a couple times and he finally finished and he's like, "I put four stents in your heart." I said, but your heart was, you're 38 years old and you're in pretty good cardiac condition. I checked everywhere else and everything else was okay. So they said it was just a calcium buildup in my right coronary artery. And then doing the workout, a piece of plaque that just, sticks on the walls of your heart and eventually breaks off and passes through, just passed through and just sealed it up. And that's what did it.
Damn.
Yeah. So
At 38.
38. Yeah.
Wow.
At 38. So then I was in the hospital for, I was in ICU for 3.5 days, because they had a balloon pump up into my aorta, helped me heal, I guess. So my daughter, she at the time, she had just turned 3, so she couldn't come into the ICU to see me, and I had like left. So this was on a Thursday. I had left Tuesday night at like 6 o'clock to go to work. They call for overtime, and that's easy overtime. Go to work, go to bed. I got to go to work next morning anyway. So I took that money, but my daughter was in the bathtub and she's 3. She's only taking baths. She's 10. She's still not taking baths. And, I just said, just because my wife said, hey, just tell him work called. And I had to, it was an emergency. I had to go in. I didn't even tell her goodbye. I felt like the biggest, like the most worthless parent on the planet. Like, what if I died and didn't, she might not remember because she was 3, but I feel like my soul would have been and not be able to rest for eternity if I hadn't done that. So I get through that whole process and I'm at the hospital and everybody starts to leave because it was a big group there. My wife's still there and she's got to, but she has to go home and get the kid, so she's gonna go home tonight, let me rest, come back in the morning. And I just break down. Like I'm not, I am now, I was not a crier before that. I cry if I can't even watch TV at Christmas time now because of the stupid movies. If I watch like It's a Wonderful Life, I'll start crying. Folgers commercials, it's terrible. But I'm losing my mind and she's just kind of like, she doesn't really know how to like comfort me or whatever. She leaves, and it's real quiet. And then she texts me and was just like, hey, have your pity party tonight. But it could be a lot worse. I'm like, that's so cold. But then I look, but she also sent me a picture. Same.
You're breaking up. You started breaking up when you were
And
saying she sent you a picture.
a call and oh yeah. Yeah. So she sent me a picture of a news article. So the same day that I had my heart attack is the day that Brad Clark passed away in Virginia. He was working a call on the interstate while I'm in the hospital and heroically saved his crew, but he did not make it. And she's like, yes, this sucked, but it could be a lot worse. And I was like, oh, that's why, so now, and I've had a chance, opportunity to talk to his widow. And I mentioned this whenever I go out and speak, and she came to our firehouse and did a presentation for us. But that was like the start of kind of like changing my mindset of, because I was so like, I was, am I gonna be able to run? I didn't even think about working. And again, then I hear my guys, like guys in the hallway, like, he's not coming back to work. Like his career might be over. Like he's just almost 20 years and it's wasted. And it was a lot mentally on that. And then I finally, that started getting me, back to it. And then I ended up getting with some group of heart attack survivors. Was remember the show The Biggest Loser? Yeah. So Bob Harper from that, same thing, heart attack, and then he went on this nationwide like group, certainly a nationwide group to find heart attack survivors. And I didn't know anybody who had like survived one that was my age. And I ended up meeting some people who were close to my age and had their experiences, and I was able to kind of, get some of that stuff. It was just, I didn't want to go see a therapist, but I wanted to talk to somebody. And that was the best, like the biggest, best outlet for me. And now I'm a big proponent of, like before, if somebody said, you need to talk about your feelings, call, like, oh, no way, bro. But now, I think that's a big, for me, it was a big part of me being able to survive that. I don't think I would have been able to be where I'm at now if I hadn't done some of that stuff.
And it's crazy too, because you mentioned how, you started to get in shape. You're doing everything you're supposed to do, and then it happens. Most of the time,
The other way.
The other way. Yeah.
My doctor told me, so I'm at the hospital and he was real honest with me, and he told me, we were talking about some stuff, and he's real blunt, but he was like, if you had not been in the shape you were in, you would not have survived. So obviously them doing CPR on you, bringing you back, but you would not be able to be at work and be able to do, like, I've run a marathon since then. I've done all this crazy stuff. But he said, the cardiac condition you were in, because you were taking care of yourself, allowed you to not have, like, I don't have, my ejection fracture is the same as it was pre-heart attack. Like, I don't have significant heart damage other than just a little minimal scarring where my stents are. I can do anything I want to do. I don't have any holdbacks or limitations because of what happened. But the only reason for that is because I took care of myself before it. And I think that's the importance of physical fitness. Like, we have to be physically fit to do our job. That goes without saying. Like, it's a contact sport, what we do. Like, we have to be physically fit to be good at our job. We all know guys in our firehouses that, God love them, but they cannot be on the level of other guys in our fire department because they're taking care of themselves and they don't. I wish everybody did. We have now implemented where you have to go work out an hour a day every shift in our department. It's a long time coming, but thank God it's there to help these guys and to keep the guys who do take care of themselves off path too. But, but like, even just for doing the job, but how many guys do you know? I know a guy who I was talking about earlier, who was my first mentor as a career fireman. He worked and worked and worked, and then he retired and he died within a year. I don't want to put 25 years in and then just die in a year. I want to enjoy the 25 years of work I put in. I want to be able to hang out with them. I got young kids. I want to be able to hang out with them for the next till they're out of the house. If they have kids, I want them to be able to come back and play with grandpa. And so it's important for the job, but I think it's more as more important as for our mental health and also out, when we get done with the job.
No, that's facts. And I really like that the fact that your department was like, okay, we're not messing around. Like, and I'm happy that it's like two ways. It sucks that you went through that, but on the flip side, like the department saw a need and they're like, okay, every shift, 1 hour, everyone's allowed to do something. And I think like you said, that is the step in the right direction there.
Yeah, and I tell people all the time, and people look at me weird when I say it, but I think, like, that him having that, it was like the big wake up call for me. Personally, priorities were really out of whack. Like, I was so focused on, and I this all happened before I got promoted to battalion chief. So I'm angry about that. I'm angry about just not, like, I have a 3-year-old daughter and I want to do more for them, and it's all coming from a place of good. But a lot of frustration. My priorities were whack. That happens. I have time to just for 4 months after this happens. I've been longest I've ever been home. My wife was she was probably so ready for work, just being tired of me being at the house. It gave me a perspective that I didn't, being that close to being dead. Like, I have another daughter now. Like, we adopted a second daughter, and that would be somebody else raised, because my wife would find somebody else in a heartbeat, that whoever that man would be raising my kids if I wasn't here. Like, all the cool things that have happened since that happened, I wouldn't like to experience, and all the work stuff on that. But it's the best gift that I've ever been given, that I wanted to have to start with. Like, to be have that ability to look back, and change things is wild to me. I can hardly remember my life before that.
No, that's that's a second chance, not a lot of people get that. And I'm sure though, with your experiences, you can so like talk to anybody else in the fire service that kind of puts that off, like, oh, I'm in good shape, or I don't need to do that, or whatever the case may be. But like, you're living proof you were trying to, you were there, you were bettering yourself, you were getting in the best shape of your life, and then just like that, it's like a wake-up call. And unfortunately, sometimes that's what happens for other people to realize, like, oh no, I should take this seriously. I shouldn't put this off.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I just remember count on, more than I need more than both my hands to count of the people that when that happened, people that I don't even just heard about it when I go out and talk at a conference or just go to, and it comes up a conversation. Oh, you're the guy. I went to the doctor and got checked out because I heard what happened to you. Like, to me, like, I'm good. So I've gotten all this extra bonus time, but to have the ability to just affect change in somebody makes it so much better.
No, definitely. Definitely. Okay. With that being said, where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Like, position wise?
As far as like your future, like whenever you reach that point in your career where you're like, okay, I'm getting ready to put my papers in, like where would you like to see yourself rank wise? Where would you like to see yourself like family wise? It's just a question I always ask the guests for
Okay.
them to kind of ponder.
So, like, for me, I am perfectly content finishing up where I am right now. I don't have a desire to promote. If something crazy comes up and I can't turn it down or something like that, then but I have no aspirations of changing what I'm doing. I'm in a really good spot. I'm in a great firehouse. I got great guys. And I enjoy going to work. When I go to work, like, I've been off for 8 days and I already packed my bag for tomorrow. Like, I'm pumped up to go back to work. But I want when I go, and I can't guarantee who takes my spot, right? But I want to make sure that my guys are ready to, I want to leave and it act, it'd be like it didn't matter that I left.
Okay. Right.
I want them to be able to just carry over like it is. They can change whatever, but I want whoever takes my spot to be ready. And I want to, that's my goal between now and whenever I decide to put these papers in and leave, is to whoever's going to take my spot, that they're ready to do it. That's my want and wish, I guess. And
Okay.
then personally, I really can't ask for anything else personally. I've been married for, what year is this? 23 years. I hope she don't listen to this. But 23 years. She's amazing, to put up with all my crap. And then I got two beautiful daughters, and as long as they're happy and healthy and they're provided for, then I'm good.
Gotcha.
I don't really have any wants and needs in life anymore.
Right.
That, I mean, there's always, like, little things you want to do, but I want to be in a position, because we homeschool our kids, so we travel all the time. I want to be in a position when I leave and dad is home at night for good, that we get to go continue to do those things and have a good time, and they don't want me to leave because they're so used to me being gone, I guess.
All right. And you mentioned earlier that you go around and teach. What do you talk about, or what do you teach when you go to these conferences?
So, I started, and it's funny, I have a terrible fear of public speaking. Had I don't not have that much anymore, but before this, my heart attack thing, and a friend of mine who worked for the department that we ran Mutual with at Dahlgren, working at the training academy in Spotsylvania, where they do, like, Spotsylvania County and King George, and they do like a joint academy. And she's like, "Hey, you should come up and talk about, like, what happened to you and why PT is important. Can you put something together?" I was like, "I guess." And I go up there and I do the thing, and she's like, "That was, like, that was pretty good. Like, maybe you should do that somewhere else." So I did our state conference, and went over real well. So I started talking about that stuff and just kind of like the importance of PT and tell my story. And so, not like, I'm not a big expert on all this stuff, so I kind of just tell what happened to me and what my doctor said, what some little bit of research that I've done. And then I started thinking about the lessons I learned going through like the Fire Officers Academy and the Chief Officers Academy and all those and things that I thought I was doing right that I really wasn't. All these mistakes that I made as a leader that I'm trying to fix now. So then I put together a presentation about like all the stuff that they don't teach you when you take your officer ones and twos and threes and fours. Like you got the paperwork and that's cool. I got 3 degrees sitting behind me in my office. They don't mean nothing. It just means I spent some money and dedicated some time. But no one cares about that stuff when they have a problem. When we pull up to a house fire and I'm starting to get the command board ready. I can't hang on there. Masters and emergency services management. Oh, fire's gonna go out. Or if I get a phone call on Father's Day and I'm home with my kids that one of my guys is going to the hospital. They care that I'm gonna make sure that they're okay, and the person who's covering that has everything they need, and I'm going to the hospital to make sure that person's okay. Or when they call when I'm on my third day off with some kind of crazy issue that I'm gonna sit and listen to them. So I teach about all the mistakes that I made with my ego and thinking that I knew better, and the things that I've learned in that time frame to hopefully help someone not make those same mistakes and waste the time that I wasted. Because we're all going to make mistakes. And I don't claim to have all the answers, but if I can tell some stories based on the dumb stuff that I did, maybe someone doesn't do the same thing. And then I'll be honest, I steal from every class that I teach because someone has a good idea and I just write it down. And I'm like, oh, that's amazing. Let me try that. And if it works for me, then I just put it in my presentation and, I'll give credit where credit's due when I tell about it, But yeah, so really it's just, I'm just trying to pay forward my good fortune. Like I was lucky enough to survive this heart attack. So I can tell people how to not have one and the available like testing out there that I didn't even know anything about until after I had the thing happen. Or I can teach about, I was doing this and this and this, and it was not working for me. So I changed and I started doing this and this, and I made some progress with my guys because of this, so hopefully that they get to have the same experience or at least have an idea of where to start when they start having problems.
Love that. Love it. Love the message. And that's the thing, like, I'm sure 20 something year Randy Feltner is different than, than today's Randy Feltner. Like, it's all because of your mentors, your experiences, the fact that you sat down and you're like, okay, like you really sat down and you really listened, like, okay, I do have to change this. Like you actually did something with it, because we all know individuals in the fire service where it's like, hey, if this individual would just change this about them, they would be there, they would be in the position they want, they would be able to affect that change. But until individuals are willing to listen to sometimes the not so great things about yourself and actually work to change and apply it, like nothing ever changes. But man, it just seems like your experiences, you've had so much good fortune come out of everything. So I just have to say, man, I appreciate you sharing your story. You sure as hell didn't have to come on here and talk about it, but you
Oh,
did. You're
I
trying to
don't mind. I
let
thought about it all.
you're trying to let other firefighters know, like, listen, it's okay to love the job, but PT is important, but also your mindset, changing your ways. If you're in a position of leadership like you're in, it's not about you. It's about the individuals who you serve alongside with. Like, yes, like if I'm one of your guys on your shift, I'm calling you chief, and that's out of respect. But we all know those individuals where it's like, you call me by this rank, you call me
Oh
by
yeah,
what's on the collar, and we
absolutely.
don't need those. So Randy, seriously, man, thank you for coming on, dude.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate it. I love having these conversations. And I say when you called me and asked me about coming and doing it, I was geeked up. I was even more geeked up that you said Mark had called you had mentioned me to you. I love that guy. The first time I went, somewhere to do it outside of like a small academy setting, he was like, I was at a our like company officers had like a little summit conference, and I had come in to teach my heart attack awareness class, and he was like the feature guy. Like they flew him in, and So I was like, oh, this guy, and I started doing some research, and then it's like, oh, he does all this crazy stuff. And then over the years, I've actually gotten to sit down, and break bread with the guy, and travel with him, and do different conferences. And just we are last time I saw him, we ran into each other in Baton Rouge at a coffee shop in between. Like, he was
Wow.
going, I was driving home. He was just coming in to do his class, and we sit there for my wife's out in the car for 30 minutes, want to know where I was at, because we sitting there, just chopping it up. But those guys have him and his like Nick Peppard and a bunch of the guys have really kind of, I see them everywhere, so they kind of just like, I'm gonna by myself when I go, so they kind of just like I've latched onto them and get to have some kind of some really wild experiences and be in some places I probably have no business being in, listening to some of these great minds in the fire department, share with them. I'm just kind of sitting in the background, just soaking it all in with imposter syndrome. But having the ability to come out and do that, or like do this and just talk a little bit and tell a story. The whole goal was to help somebody else. Like, I'm
Absolutely.
good. I got everything that I need. If I can help somebody else get to where I'm at, or at least have that mindset of, what you got is pretty good, then it's a win.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Like I said, pal, if anybody wants to get a hold of you, so maybe you can come in and talk about the importance of PT, how would they go about doing that?
They can just shoot me an email. I can give that, if you want to
Yep.
put it up
Yeah, go
on the
ahead.
phone.
No, yeah, go ahead. You can say it.
It's Randolph dot Feltner at Gmail, RANDOLPH dot Feltner, FELTNER at gmail.com. I don't have like a website or anything that's
Right.
up, but yeah, feel free to reach out anytime. My notifications go off all the time, so I look right at it and I'll get back to you quick. I love
Okay.
doing this stuff.
Awesome. Awesome. Randy, like I said, man, I truly appreciate your time today. Love the message, loved hearing your story. And I just, like I said, I just have to say thank you for spending time out of your day to do this.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.